And good morning and welcome to the Albany Report. I'm your host, former State Senator Cecilia Kacik. I hope everyone had a wonderful weekend and a happy Mother's Day. I know I did. Today we will be talking about education issues. School budget votes are coming up on May 19th. And here in the studio to talk with me about education budgets and our local schools is Catskill School District Superintendent Dr. Kathleen Farrell. She'll be speaking with me on the air about what's happening with her school budget and get a reaction to her about the education policies that have been coming down from Albany. But first, we want to talk about what's going on in Albany. And last week was a very chaotic week in the New York State Senate. The leadership in the Senate is basically in chaos at the moment. Last Monday, Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos and his son Adam were arrested and are facing serious corruption and bribery charges from the U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. That night, last Monday, senators emerged from a three-hour closed-door meeting backing Skelos and keeping him in the leadership position. On Wednesday, however, the Democratic minority members attempted to force a vote on the leadership by putting a resolution on the floor. The move was rebuffed by the Republicans, and the Democrats walked out of the chamber after a testy back-and-forth exchange. Since then, more senators have publicly called for the Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos to step down in light of the federal corruption charges against him. Nearly one-third of the GOP conference has already publicly come out to call on Skelos to step down. By Friday, news reports indicated that Skelos was refusing to step down as Majority Leader and threatened to resign entirely if he was forced to. By Saturday, however, the Daily News reported that Dean Skelos was planning to resign as Majority Leader, but would only do so if a Long Island delegate member took his place. It is expected that Republican senators will be meeting today behind closed doors this morning to resolve the leadership question. Speculation is that Senator Skelos will either resign or be forced to, and it is unclear who will be chosen as the new majority leader. Expectation is that the new leader will likely be one of two senators, John DeFrancisco of Syracuse or John Flanagan of Suffolk County. Of course, nothing is ever certain in Albany until all the votes are cast, and in this case, a change in the leadership would have to be approved by the full Senate. The Senate is expected to go into session at 3 o'clock today, and you can watch the session live on the New York State Senate website or on a local cable channel. Just look it up on the website. And Democrats are ready to force the issue and have already submitted the paperwork they say is necessary to suspend the Senate floor rules and make sure a vote takes place today to remove Skelos. Whether or not that happens, we'll all have to wait and see. And the session may be delayed or not even called. It's up to the majority. So it will be an interesting session today, to say the least. One of the issues we've been following has been the LLC loophole legislation, S-60. Bills to close the LLC loophole are advancing in both houses of the legislature. S-60, which is sponsored by Senator Daniel Squadron, is pending now in the Corporations Committee. And A-6957B, sponsored by Assemblymember Brian Kavanaugh, is waiting a floor vote. It passed through the Assembly Elections Committee. Limited liability companies, or LLCs, are used by a wide variety of industries to circumvent the $5,000 annual corporate contribution limit in New York State campaign finance laws. And relying on the New York State Board of Elections 1996 determination to treat LLCs as individuals subjects them to a $150,000 annual contribution limit. As a result of this loophole, companies are able to donate hundreds of thousands of dollars to individual candidates, and in some cases, more than $1 million to individual gubernatorial candidates. Glenwood Management is cited in numerous analysis and press reports for its aggressive use of LLC loophole and figures prominently in both the U.S. versus Sheldon Silver and U.S. versus Dean and Adam Skelos' federal public corruption complaints. It's also worth noting that Senator Michael Ranzenhofer, who is chair of the Corporations, Authorities, and Commissions Committee, in which S-60, a bill to close the loophole, is currently pending, received almost 94% of the $101,000 he received for campaign contributions came to him through LLCs. These LLCs were controlled by Glenwood. The Corporations Committee is meeting today, but S-60 is not on its agenda. S-60, according to Senate rules, has to come up on the next Corporations Committee agenda. We'll see if that meets. So there has been some progress. We'll see if it ever gets to the floor. On other news, last week Governor Andrew Cuomo instructed Acting State Labor Commissioner Mario Mussolino to empanel a wage board that will investigate and make recommendations on an increase in the minimum wage in the fast food industry. Under current New York State law, a wage board can suggest changes to the minimum wage in a specific industry or job classification if it finds that wages are insufficient to provide for the life and health of workers within that industry or classification. Those recommendations from the wage board are expected by July and do not require legislative approval in order to become enacted. At a rally with unions and elected officials, the governor stated, "I don't want the taxpayers of New York subsidizing the profits of McDonald's anymore. I think the fast food industry should live up to the spirit of the law and pay a minimum wage that is truly a minimum wage and a livable wage." Not everyone agreed with the convening of the wage board. The State Restaurant Association's Melissa Fleischert had this to say. "Singling out a sector of one industry to have a higher minimum wage than all other occupations is unfair and arbitrary. The minimum wage is rightfully set by the legislature and should affect all businesses equally." The request to establish a wage board is Cuomo's second in a year. Last July, he asked the Department of Labor to set up a board to review the minimum wage for tipped workers. The board recommended, and the commissioner of the Department of Labor agreed, to raise tipped wages to $7.50 by the end of this year. The regular minimum wage of $8.75 is set to rise to $9 per hour at the end of this year. That will be the last stepped increase of the wage as laid out in the 2013 budget agreement between the legislature and the governor. The legislature is also considering increasing the minimum wage again. On Monday, the assembly approved a minimum wage proposal which would provide more stepped increases, eventually topping out at $12.60 statewide and $15 in New York City and its suburbs by the end of 2018. And yesterday, Governor Cuomo received a briefing on the status of Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant in Westchester. A fire occurred in a transformer over the weekend, which was put out, but the plant is currently offline. DEC is monitoring the cleanup, and it's known that oil was discharged into the Hudson River because of the fire and cleanup efforts. It's not known how many gallons of oil were discharged, but DEC is on the site and monitoring the impact. So we will be taking a short break. After our break, we'll be on the air with our guests to talk about education, and we'll be right back on the Albany Report.
Sun, I say it's all right. All right.
You're listening to the Albany Report. If you have a question for next week's show or another topic, you can call and leave that question at 518-291-WGXC or send a message on Twitter to @WGXC. Or you can search Facebook for The Albany Report or send an email to thealbanyreport@gmail.com. And we're back with The Albany Report. And I'm here with my guest, Dr. Kathleen Farrell.
Good morning, Cece. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me in the studio. So you are the superintendent for the Catskill School District.
Yes, I am.
And how many kids
We have slightly over 1,700, about 17 and a quarter.
And how long have you been superintendent?
10 years.
Wow. I just have to say, as a former school board member and a mom of a public school student who's, he just turned 16, I can't believe it. But I want to say, I really understand how difficult your job is.
It's like popcorn. There's always something happening.
And I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing on behalf of all our kids everywhere. And one of the things that I wish I had done when I was, you know, left public school is to thank my teachers and to thank the people who ran the school, because my public school gave me a great education, and I would not be where I am today without a strong public school system.
I believe public schools are the foundation of our society. We have the opportunity to touch every child, regardless of wealth, regardless of location, regardless of other socioeconomic factors. It's the great equalizer, and public schools raise us all up.
So I'm a big fan of public schools, and you obviously love your job because you've been doing it for 10 years. Why did you get into this role, this work? What gets you up in the morning?
What gets me up is the fact that we can make change happen for our students. We can give them opportunities that they might not have otherwise. We can help open their eyes, along with their families and our community support, to opportunities that exist in our world that they might bypass otherwise. Youth is our future. It's a trite saying, perhaps overused, but very, very accurate.
Right.
And we need to support our kids so that they can go on to provide a better world for all of us.
Well, school budgets are coming up, May 19th. This is, I think, the only place where you actually vote on a budget as a citizen.
We are the only budget that citizens have the opportunity to say no to if they are disgruntled with any aspect of government or taxing, which is a sad situation because sometimes people are frustrated and they don't recognize that we are not necessarily the source of their frustration.
Right. So 19th is the day. When is the timeline?
Our polls are open 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. We have lots of folks who work and need to commute, so we make sure that they have the opportunity to vote either in the morning or late at night.
And who can vote?
Any registered voter of the district, and any voter can request an absentee ballot. There is a timeline for that, and vote by mail. And if you have not registered to vote but are registered in its town or municipality within the district, you can vote and have that vote challenged subsequent to identification that you are registered within the district.
And I know it takes a long process to get to the 19th in how you look at the budget and how you figure out what that total is going to entail that the voters are voting on. Can you give us a little sense of what we're voting on the 19th in Catskill?
Well, first, to speak of the timeline, we start to plan for next year's budget on May 20th, the day after the vote. We're always keeping a bottom line and an eye on finances. We will be voting on a budget of slightly over $40 million. This represents a decrease in our funding from last year of approximately $100,000, or 2.38%. There's a 1.94% increase in our tax cap, and that's based on formula that comes down from the legislature. There is a misnomer. Folks call this the 2% tax cap. It is not. There is a formula that determines the taxable number. It can be great, much higher than 2%. I've seen districts that go out with a 6-7% raise, which is allowable.
And they're still under their quote-unquote cap.
Yes, exactly. We're at 1.94. That 1.94 will increase our funding from community members by approximately $17,000.
that's not a lot for a district your size.
No, it's not. And that is one of the myths of the tax cap mandate. The districts which have greater wealth and greater proportional ability to tax that wealth will raise much greater funds with the same percent increase.
Right. So like a 2% increase in Westchester is going to bring in a lot more revenue.
Many more bucks.
Than it will in the Catskill School District.
Yes. The concept that the tax cap would level the playing field and provide equality for all students in this funding is really a myth. Hmm. It actually widens that disparity.
Well, I know that legislature, there are some that are calling for the property tax cap to be made permanent. I mean, do you think it's helped keep taxes lower on the local level?
I don't think it has in our district. Mm-hmm. We've always been relatively frugal. We have never asked our voters to support extravagant increases.
Well, because they could vote it down.
Exactly. And nobody wants to be in that situation. We want a budget that's fair to our students, fair to our community and taxpayers. No one likes increases in taxpayers. I'm a homeowner, too, in New York State. I don't like paying increases. But folks need to be reminded, and I don't mean to be rude, schools are a business. We're a service provider, but we're also a business, and we have to pay for the activities that we maintain to support all of our youth. And that takes, to be tried again, the whole village.
Right. Now, one of the things that occurred and really, I think, hurt small rural school districts is the cuts in state aid. It takes a village, but part of that village is the state of New York. And I know when I was on my school district, we saw a significant impact on the amount of state aid, and the state aid cuts were actually forcing us to push more of our property tax budget to climb to cover more of our school budget. Have you seen that?
Yes. That has happened to us in the past. Unfortunately, now as the state aid cuts are affected, even though we did receive a substantial portion of our gap elimination funding this year, we don't have the ability to increase taxes because of the tax cap. In the long run, the bottom line is if state aid and federal aid doesn't increase and we can't raise more funds through taxes, programs will be cut.
Right. So we are still not out of the woods as far as education funding.
Oh,
goes.
Absolutely not. And there are more and more mandates coming down the pike every day.
And now the GEA was cut significantly in the state budget. How did that affect your budget here?
That affected us. We received approximately an additional $900,000, which is wonderful. It was funding that we were not expecting, and we're very pleased to have it, which explains the commensurate reduction in our spending from last year to this year. However, it's important for folks to keep in mind that as that gap elimination money is returned to districts, it will end. Next year, the state owes us, if you will, an additional $94,000. And once that funds come back to us, we can only count on the annual allotment from the state, whatever that might be, in foundation aid.
So they could wipe out the GEA next year in the budget?
Yes, yes. And then moving forward, we'd be looking at only federal and state regular ed funding.
And how has it impacted the staffing this year? Have you been able to add positions or cut positions?
This year we've been very fortunate. In the past, due to budget constraints, we did lay off a number of teachers. We maintain our programs, but at a smaller depth. This year we've been able to add a full-time instrumental music teacher to the elementary school program again. We're looking at adding an additional support staff member in the high school, and we're also looking at opening a special ed program for our middle school students who are moving into the high school for whom we do not have an appropriate self-contained class, rather than sending them out of district.
So the school budget is May 19th. If mm-hmm. people have questions, you have information on your website?
Yes, we do.
And what's the website? How do we get to it?
CatskillCSD.org.
Great. And if they have questions that they can't get answered on the website, who can they call?
They can call me, 518-943-4696. And if I can't answer it, I'll direct them to Robin Bend, who is our business official, who is very fluent in numbers.
Excellent. So I encourage people to get out and vote. I know it's not always convenient to stop by the school. Where is the vote for your
school?
The
vote is in the high school in the gym, 6 to 9.
Great. So we do have a couple questions that came in that I hope you can help me answer. This is from Anonymous in Athens. I'm a new homeowner. What's the difference between the tax levy and the tax rate? I'm confused. And how are they determined?
The tax rate is determined by formula, as we discussed, which comes down from the state. And that rate is the portion that each homeowner pays. So if you own a $100,000 house in Catskill, you would pay 1.94% on that $100,000.
Okay.
The tax levy is the entire amount of money that will be raised by the taxes. In this case, that increase in taxes adds $17,000 to our tax levy.
Okay. I have another question. This is from Tim in Catskill. What happens if the school budget is voted down?
That's
a good question.
Yeah, it's a scary question. You go to a contingency budget. In our case, a contingency budget would cut a little over $1 million from our current budget. And what it would mean is that we would not be able to buy pieces of equipment and certain software and hardware. We'd have to follow the minimum guidelines by the state.
So you already know what that budget looks like. So if can you put the budget up again for a vote, or it just goes automatically to the contingency budget?
Yes, the Board of Education can choose to hold an additional election and resubmit the proposed budget for an affirmative vote. We have been very fortunate. We've never had to do that, at least in the 10 years I've been in the district, and I pray every night that we will not have to do that.
I know I've been in that situation where we lost our school budget vote by just a few votes, mm-hmm. and we went back and cut more out of the budget, and it was very painful, and then it passed. But the whole process, I think, is important for folks to learn what's in there, get your questions answered, and come out and vote.
We also assume considerable expense. I can't give you the dollar number, I apologize, in holding an election. Mm. For example, this is the last year that we can use our old voting machines before we roll over to electronic voting machines.
That means you have to have the paper scanners?
Exactly. And we're fortunate we're going to be working with our county on that. But that is a considerable expense for many, many districts.
Yep. Because you have to print all those ballots.
Yes, we have to print the ballots. We send out the information to our community members. We pay the poll watchers. We have software that tabulates the results accurately. It's just like having a regular November election, except on a greatly smaller scale,
yep.
but with all the bells and whistles.
Yep. Shifting gears, one of the questions we got is about the opting out on standardized tests. Have you seen a lot of kids opt out this cycle?
Yes, we've had a greater number of refusals than we have ever had before. The grade 3 through 8 testing has been effective in New York for well over 20 years, and the connection, I believe, between APPR and the evaluation of staff and the testing program has given rise to a larger numbers of parents refusing to have their children participate. Interestingly enough, overall district-wide, we had 34% refuse the ELA exams and 44%, slightly over 44%, refuse the math.
Wow.
But interestingly, our lowest number of refusals in both ELA and math were in our third grade, which I think is fascinating because our third graders are students who have been working with the material that is on the exam since they started school. They are the most comfortable, the most fluent in the testing procedures and the type of tests they're taking, and their parents are the most familiar with it, too.
Why are people telling you that they're opting out their children?
They're unhappy with the use of the test scores as a growth score for teachers as part of their APPR.
So this is their way of telling Albany, hands off my kid, essentially.
Yes, that's a good way to phrase it. Unfortunately, there are consequences for a school district. We are mandated to have 95% participation. Obviously, we did not do that. Some of our teachers are not going to receive a growth score from the state. We use backup material. They're called SLOs, which also document student growth. NICET has taken a position that teachers shouldn't use backup SLOs, that that's inappropriate and illegal. However, the district must have material to compute a growth score for teachers on their APPR, their annual evaluation, or face the potential of financial penalties. I am not a superintendent who ever wants to ignore the regulation.
Right.
Whether I personally agree with it, whether our board agrees with it, we have a mandate. We must be in compliance.
Right, because if you don't comply with the mandates, you put the state aid and the federal aid you're receiving at risk.
Yes. And there is much speculation that there will be no financial penalties. I'd like to believe that. But I'm not that happy or lucky a gambler.
How do you, when does that decision get made? I mean, when do you find that out?
We probably would not find that out until well past this year's election. I would guess we would not receive notification of that till sometime over the summer. But I am hopeful that will not be a consequence.
And who makes that decision?
That would come from the legislature and the governor and the Board of Regents.
Now, the Board of Regents has been given, you know, more of a role, supposedly, with the negotiations that happened during the budget process. We should say that the governor wanted some significant changes in the evaluation process and was kind of holding up the budget process and the need for schools to find out what they're getting, and the legislature feeling squeezed, essentially, to maybe get some reforms in that he couldn't without having the budget process as a wedge. And so how has all that
it's increased tension and anxiety for every sitting superintendent in New York State. What it means is that the Board of Regents has been given, and State Ed has been given, the task to develop new regulations and new procedures for the evaluation process, APPR, but they only have until the end of June to do so. Originally,
that's next month.
Yes. Originally, districts were going to receive this information the end of June and have until the middle of November to negotiate and adopt and file their APPR plan based on those regulations. That has now been moved back to September 1st. And there is that looming guillotine of financial cut if we are not in compliance. That is not only a Herculean task, but an impossible task.
It doesn't sound like it's practical.
Well, it's not a thoughtful, planned revision of the APPR, which is what this was supposed to be. This will be our fifth reiteration of APPR in New York State.
In how many years?
Six. And to hurry up and make changes and enforce financial penalties for districts that cannot comply and negotiate with their bargaining units and meet that deadline based on a deadline that's very difficult for SED to meet doesn't seem to be fair and equitable to our students, who are the consumers of the products of their fruit,
and
the fruit of their
you
labors.
Can't even really get the ball rolling until you get guidelines from SED.
No.
Because everything has to comply with their regulations. And
yes, and some of this may be non-negotiable mandate that is part of the plan, and some of it is appears to be negotiable. The negotiables are the largest stumbling block.
So the state budget did include more money for schools, which I'm sure you were happy to see.
Absolutely.
Did the holding up the school aid runs, was that a problem in the end?
It slowed the process. there was less opportunity to have meaningful conversation because much of it was based on speculation and hope and the wish list. But fortunately, no, we still had sufficient time to produce a budget. And we were very fortunate because we did receive additional funding. And we've been very thoughtful in how we spend our funds. We have an unappropriated reserve fund, which we will dip into again to support our budget. We're supposed to maintain not more than 4% of our total budget in that fund. And we are expecting a controller's audit again next year. This will be our fifth year audit. And we quite candidly do maintain slightly more than 4%, because if you don't have your savings account to fall back on when times are tough, what will you do? Just like any other business owner or homeowner, we maintain a savings account.
And a lot of people would call that prudent budgeting.
I hope so.
There's still a lot of uncertainty, you know, around
there is
around education policy, and it does impact how you do your job. And we have a clip from Senator Seward, and I would like to play that and get your reaction, because the budget passed, you got more money, you got some mandates from Albany that dictated how you were going to address the evaluation process, and now there's legislation to change it. And it's being proposed by Senator Flanagan in the Senate and Assemblywoman Nolan in the Assembly, both chairs of the Education Committee. So Senator Seward sent out some comments about it, and I would just like to play that and get your reaction.
Absolutely.
So here's Senator Seward on education reform legislation.
After rejecting many of the governor's education proposals, I secured modifications in the state budget that will reduce standardized testing and test preparation and require educational professionals to revise the teacher evaluation system. Now, changing the governor's bad proposals in the budget was just a first step. I know more reforms are needed to make certain our children are truly receiving a good, sound education and that teacher evaluations are fair. That's why I am co-sponsoring new legislation to help reach that goal. Extending the time period to enact a teacher evaluation system with greater input from educators, parents, and students. Requiring a full review of standardized tests to make sure they are age-appropriate and effective. And making sure test results are made available to teachers and parents in a timely fashion are just a few of the reforms that are included in this new bill. Also, many parents decided not to have their children take standardized tests this spring. Federal funds tied to these testing numbers should not be in jeopardy, and I'm calling on our federal representatives to back up our parents on this issue, as well as reducing the number of required standardized tests. The state budget increased school aid by $1.4 billion and greatly reduced the gap elimination adjustment. Two steps that will help our schools with their balance sheet. Now, by looking at additional reforms, we will be able to make sure that classroom needs are being met and students and teachers are able to excel, which, of course, is the ultimate goal that we all share.
Well, there you have it.
Well, I certainly applaud a more thoughtful approach to the regulations and the legislature that is in practice now. I think a review of the test documents, an overhaul of APPR that takes into consideration lots of pieces of performance rather than relying mainly on growth scores is long overdue. So I certainly would support the procedures and practices that Jim is hoping to put into place, and he's been a strong advocate for appropriate funding for public education, as well as for appropriate response by educators. We need to be held accountable. There's no question about that, but it should be done in a manner that is productive.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't appreciate pushing the discussion about the evaluation process in the budget, mm-hmm. and, you know, forcing, you know, this was the governor's essentially mandate, it's my way or the highway.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make any sense.
Again, you know, we should be accountable, and I am not opposed to testing, but there should be testing that's in place that is prudent and that is documented to be productive, and it should not necessarily be tied to funding. We don't have other sources of funding, and we must exist.
Right. So in education funding is complicated. So one of the things he said that I wanted your reaction to is he said with the changes they made in the budget, testing was reduced.
I have not seen any reduction in standardized testing. The only change that he might be referencing is my understanding is under the new APPR, the local 20 portion of the APPR may be optional, but that has not been released yet. That would mean there might be one less exam for students. However, much of the local 20 is currently in many districts tied into existing tests and existing protocols.
So local 20 is a local percentage of data that you look at, local tests.
The current APPR requirements have 60% based on evaluation, 20% on state testing, and 20% on local assessments, which is negotiated.
And the new APPR that was put into the budget,
it's mystery meat.
Is mystery meat. This is right. This is going to be decided by the Board of Regents.
Yes.
What that mathematical equation will
yes.
be.
There is speculation that it will contain, speculation, please, contain 50% based on observation and the larger portion of the remaining 50% based on state testing and growth scores with the option of a local component that could be negotiated. And that would also be based on assessment of some form.
And the whole issue around people opting out, and the senator mentioned it, it's complicated because you have federal funds, and the federal government has a say on how to react to this opt-out
situation. The feds are never going to look at Catskill. They're going to look at the overall performance of New York State. And because the state had such a high number of parents refuse to have their children participate, there could be financial consequences. I would hope that the federal government would take into account much of the media hype that surrounded the testing, many of our elected officials urging parents not to have their students participate in the testing. It truly has been the perfect storm for us.
Yeah, so he said that they would put out a resolution urging the federal government not to penalize New York State
yes.
and our local school districts because parents decided to opt out.
Yes.
Again, it just points to the, you know, this is a complicated and this is a serious issue that we shouldn't be ramming through the budget process
no.
and take our time and not have people feel like you're not doing the best interest, you're not making decisions in the best interest of my child in our education system. And that's what's bothered me, is that mm-hmm. we're not taking the work seriously. I'm glad to see that there is legislation, but of course it has to be negotiated with the governor who was pushing this reform agenda in the budget in the first place. And, you know, we wait to see what happens in the state Senate, and you know, there's a lot of chaos going around Albany because of leadership issues. So, but there's still 5 weeks left in the session.
This is one of those situations where taking more time will certainly produce a better product, a product that may be developed thoughtfully, take into consideration all of those factors, and be a product that we can use for many years to come, rather than consistently rewriting the script.
Now, the Board of Regents had a meeting last week where they were, I guess, talking to school officials and school board members and teachers about this evaluation process. Did you hear about that? Did you participate in any
way? I didn't participate, but I have heard some of the outcomes of it, and essentially they're saying what we're saying. Let's move slowly. Let's take into consideration how we're going to use the test material as a basis for evaluation for teachers. And let's see if we can come up with a process that is reflective and fair to all participating. I don't think anyone in education says that we shouldn't be held accountable, that there shouldn't be some measure to mark what we do and what we are not doing well. But there has to be consideration of how we administer these procedures in a manner that is equitable.
And how do you, as a school superintendent, participate with the Board of Regents in coming up with, you know, one of the complaints was in the past that the policies that were being put in place did not involve adequate information and dialogue with local schools and teachers. And let's face it, the Board of the Education Department got a lot of flack for not doing a very good job of rolling out the implementation of the new Common Core standards. Have things changed from your perspective, and is there, is the let's do this thoughtfully and make sure that we're putting together the right recommendations through the Board of Regents, is there a system in place that allows you to do that?
Well, the system, you let me back up there. As individuals, we always have the opportunity to connect with our regents and with the Board of Regents or with SED attend meetings. We have members of the Superintendent's Council who are legislative representatives who bring our wishes and hopes to the regents and to SED. We also work with our district soups through the BOCES situation.
Right.
I'm very proud to say we had a site visit by our regent, Regent Finn, a week and a half ago. It's the first time a regent has ever visited Catskill. And we had the opportunity to discuss some of our concerns and showcase some of the things that we're doing, as well as discuss our shortcomings and our plans to improve achievement for our students. It's a difficult process. It's akin to electing a senator or a House of Representatives member and wanting to have input into the candidates' positions as they're formulating them, and then once they're elected, advising them, this is what's going back at home, not just in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar process.
Well, certainly the Board of Regents is under a lot more scrutiny these days, but we're still without a commissioner at the Board of Education, so I think it's even more incumbent on the Board of Regents to step in and kind of put the politics aside and say, this is the best way to do this process for our kids and our communities and our taxpayers.
I think there's such misunderstanding, too, of the Common Core. The Common Core is the curriculum. That's all it is. And we have always, in New York State, been working under mandates for what should be in the curriculum for certain grade levels, for certain subjects. Our Regents exams are reflective of that. There's a prescribed curriculum that students must document mastery of before they graduate from high school. This is not uncommon in many states in the United States. The Common Core was an attempt by the Federal Education Department to standardize that curriculum and to help students who have high mobility rates be able to continue their education with some thoughtful planning as they move from district to district or state to state, and also to, again, raise the ship so that everyone was working on the same standards and working towards the same goals. I have great faith in the Common Core curriculum. All it does is ask our students to be thoughtful consumers, to expect our students to be able to compute and understand why they're doing what they do, to read and to reason and to give critical evaluation to material. That's appropriate. The Common Core doesn't prescribe the material that you need to use. It doesn't say you have to do this, this, and this. You have to hand out these worksheets. What it says is that these are the standards that we expect you to work to, you individual teacher, to work towards and make sure that our students have those fluencies. I think that's a good thing.
Right. And I think how you implement that, though, was rocky.
Yes. Some districts have taken a very proscribed manner. They've handed down, this is what you're doing on day one, this is what you're doing on day two. We haven't done that. We've worked with our teachers and our content specialists from Questar to write curriculum, to map curriculum, to match the standards, to develop assessments that guide our work. We're not finished yet, but we're getting there. I'm not interested if I have six first grade teachers. I don't want every first grade teacher teaching the same thing in their room.
Right.
I want them reaching those standards and reaching those students using the abundance of materials we already have to help our students grow.
Right. It's every child is different.
Absolutely. And every teacher is different. And you can achieve the same goal, the standard, in many, many different ways.
So also on May 19th, you're voting for school board members.
Yes.
And I just wanted to make sure people were aware, it's not just the budget, it's the school board. And do you have any contested races? Or
we have three vacant seats and we have six candidates running.
Great.
We also will be voting on our library budget, the district, the public library in our district. They are part of the referendum. And this year, for the first time, we're going to be doing an exit poll based on the veterans exemption.
Oh, okay. Let's explain what that is.
Okay. The veterans exemption is a cut in the amount of taxes certain categories of veterans pay for state taxes or municipal taxes. And the legislature this past year extended that ability to school districts also. We've had some conversations with the board about this and haven't come to a decision. So the board decided they'd like to find out what the voters in our district feel about this practice. Essentially, what it would mean is that based on the category of participation in armed services that you or a family member, if the person is a widow or the surviving parents of a military person, could see a reduction in their tax rate. And then that portion of the reduction in the rate would be shared by other voters.
And so there's the rub. The state is saying you can offer this, but other taxpayers in your school district have to make up the difference. It's
yes.
Not like the state is giving you more money from the state to do
exactly.
This.
Exactly. So before the board makes any decisions, they decided they'd like to get some more input. There will be a question asking how folks feel about this. I think it would have been much nicer of the governor and fairer to all the citizens of New York State if this was funded through the income tax in a different manner.
Yes, so this
at the state level rather than passed down to each municipality and each district and each county.
Right, because again, smaller school districts. And do you know the number of people that might be affected by this?
No, and that's one of our other considerations. Because of the mobility rate, we're not sure who exactly would be affected, who might even file for the exemption. And please make no mistake, our Board of Education and I am dedicated to the well-being of our military families. They protect us all. They have served us. They've gone above and beyond. This is now a question of raising public funds,
right,
and how it is best to do.
And you don't even know what financial impact it could potentially have on the school district, yet you're put in the very public position of deciding, can we do this or not?
Exactly.
And you know, you get your budgets voted on by voters.
Exactly.
That's a really important issue, and another reason why voters should come out and on May 19th and not only vote on the budget, but participate in the exit survey.
And they can also have a chicken barbecue dinner.
Oh, there you go. I'm coming now.
One of our classes in the high school is sponsoring a chicken barbecue dinner. So please call 943-4696 for further information.
And that's about the chicken barbecue?
That's about the chicken barbecue.
You need to do that number more slowly.
943-4696.
And who are they calling?
They're calling my office, and we'll get them tied up with the information they need to pre-order or purchase on site.
That's terrific. So it's a crazy spring. So once the budget's passed, what's next for the school district? You're getting ready for graduation.
We're getting ready for graduation, for moving up ceremonies, for summer school, for thinking about the upcoming year and replacing some of our retirees, interviewing, developing schedules that are appropriate to support our kids. We're also very fortunate as we collaborate with most of our neighboring districts in many initiatives to be cost savings. We run secondary summer school and elementary summer school. But Coxsackie Athens does middle school, so we swap elementary and middle school students for summer school.
So this is a way to share services and save money.
Exactly. We also run a summer media camp. We have a digital media center, does TV and radio productions. We run a CTE program, a career and technical education program supported by our BOCES out of our media center.
This is during the summer?
It's a year-round program, but we run summer camp for all of our students who are not necessarily in that program. We usually have somewhere between 40 and 70 students enroll from grade 4 up. So we're getting ready for summer media camp. We hold a Oscar-worthy ceremony at the end of the camp at our local movie theater, and all of the kids get to show their videos and films on the big screen.
That sounds like a lot of fun and a great activity to do during the summer.
It is, so we're getting ready for that, too.
I know. I haven't figured out what I'm doing with my kid over the summer.
Well, media camp is always open.
Even to people outside the district?
To people outside the district.
Okay. One of the things that was talked about in the state budget, and I wanted to know what was happening in Catskill, is pre-K. There was funding last year put in the budget of $300 million for New York City to fund a pre-K program, and only, I think it was $40 million for the rest of the state.
Yep.
And they talked about doing more pre-K money in this year's budget. How's that? Something you've been able to tap into?
No. The pre-K money that was added to the budget went into the Smart Tech Bond, and it was designated for construction of appropriate facility for pre-K. So the additional pre-K money over and above the standard pre-K money has not yet been let. We will be making application for the Smart Tech money. Our district has been identified to be able to receive a little between $800,000 and $900,000. We have a planning committee. We've had a long-term planning committee and district-wide technology five-year plan, so we'll be able to tap into that and make application. It is amazing that the money has been identified for the district, but you must submit a competitive application, which I don't quite understand. I can understand that you have to submit to tap into the money based on the parameters, but we'll see how that goes.
Yes. So we're going to be slowly hearing louder and louder train noises because the train is right behind the building that that the studio is in. So we will sort of wrap it up. My last question to you is, what do you want to see the legislature focus on next year? Because once the budget's done, you got to start thinking about the future.
I'd like to see them focus on thoughtful planning for how we fund education. Funding public education in New York State based on property taxes just doesn't work anymore. It increases disparity and inequity. There has to be a better solution for how we fund and how we can anticipate revenue sources moving forward.
Great. Well, on that note, we're going to leave it there, and we're going to sign off on the Albany Report. And next week, we're going to be talking about the a new program that the governor touted. Oh, actually, we're okay. It was only one little engine.
The little engine that could.
Yes. So we don't have to sign off right now. But this is community radio, and the train is part of our community.
That's right.
We love when the train comes by, but we never know when it's going to do that.
It's kind of like funding. We know it's coming, but we don't know when.
And we're not quite sure how many trains are coming. So is there anything else you'd like folks to think about or know before the budget on May 19th? Oh, I do have one question. I know you're part of the Greene County School Boards Association, and school boards throughout Greene County have been regularly getting together to share resources and compare notes and work together. Is there anything going on a countywide level that you want the voters to know about?
Well, the Greene County Soups get together once a month, and so do the Greene County School Boards four times a year. We consistently look for ways we can collaborate and share resources. We share transportation routing between our districts wherever possible. We share special education programs so that our students can maintain local access to education rather than be transported at great distances. Currently, our district shares our food service manager with Hunter Tannisville. We house a CTE program, which was the first on our side of the river in our consortium. Hunter Tannisville will be opening a hospitality CTE program, and Hudson, who we also work together with, is working on opening a program for medical services and all sorts of medical careers. We also participate with a shared business office. We do that cross-contracting with the ONC BOCES, which has been a real cost saver for us, as many of our other component districts also share. So we meet regularly and try to squeeze as much juice out of the lime as possible.
That's great, and it's necessary. And
right.
What?
Well, also, it has brought about greater public scrutiny in these cost-sharing initiatives is the governor's 1% reduction in costs through tax through cost sharing. This results in a tax rebate to our citizens. Just as they receive the first portion this year, next year they'll be eligible too. And
right.
We will have our paperwork done and in by June 1st, and so will our component districts in Greene County.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Dr. Farrell, for coming
thank
in.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
This is great, informative. I know I learned a lot. And please go out and vote on May the 19th at your local school budget, and you can find out more information from your local school on their website and call them if you have any questions. Coming up next week, we'll be talking about Governor Cuomo's Startup New York program. The comptroller is coming out with an audit today. We'll take a closer look on how effective that program has been in creating jobs in upstate New York. Until then, I'm Cecilia Kachik signing off on the Albany Report. Have a great week.